prepared by Stephen J. Macaluso, REF at Matrix. Newpults.edu greater than I and My Chimney by Herman Melville. I and my chimney, two gray-headed old smokers, reside in the country. We are, I may say, old settlers here, particularly my old chimney, which settles more and more every day. Though I always say, I and my chimney, as Cardinal Wolsey used to say, I and my king, yet this egotistic way of speaking, wherein I take precedence of my chimney, is hereby borne out by the facts. In everything, except the above phrase, my chimney taking precedence of me. Within 30 feet of the turf-sided road, my chimney a huge, corpulent old Harriet of a chimney rises full in front of me, and all my possessions. Standing well up a hillside, my chimney, like Lord Rosse's monster telescope, swung vertical to hit the meridian moon, is the first object to greet the approaching traveler's eye, nor is it the last which the sun salutes. My chimney, too, is before me in receiving the first fruits of the seasons. The snow is on its head here on my hat, and every spring, as in a hollow beech tree, the first swallows build their nests in it. But it is within doors that the preeminence of my chimney is most manifest. When in the rear room, set apart for that object, I stand to receive my guests who, by the way, call more, I suspect, to see my chimney than me, I then stand, not so much before, as, strictly speaking, behind my chimney, which is, indeed, the true host. Not that I demur. In the presence of my betters, I hope I know my place. From this habitual precedence of my chimney over me, some even think that I have got into a sad rearward way altogether. In short, from standing behind my old-fashioned chimney so much, I have got to be quite behind the age too, as well as running behindhand in everything else. But to tell the truth, I never was a very forward old fellow, nor what my farming neighbors call a forehanded one. Indeed, those rumors about my behindedness are so far correct that I have an odd sauntering way with me sometimes of going about with my hands behind my back. As for my belonging to the rear guard in general, certain it is, I bring up the rear of my chimney which, by the way, is this moment before me and that too, both in fancy and fact. In brief, my chimney is my superior. My superior too, in that humbly bowing over with shovel and tongs, I much minister to it, yet never does it minister, or incline over to me, but, if anything, in its settlings, rather leans the other way. My chimney is grand seigneur here, the one great domineering object, not more of the landscape, than of the house. All the rest of which house, in each architectural arrangement, as may shortly appear, is, in the most marked manner, accommodated, not to my wants, but to my chimneys, which, among other things, has the center of the house to himself, leaving but the odd holes and corners to me. But I and my chimney must explain, and as we are both rather obese, we may have to expatiate. In those houses which are strictly double houses, that is, where the hall is in the middle, the fireplaces usually are on opposite sides, so that while one member of the household is warming himself at a fire built into a recess of the north wall, say another member, the former's own brother, perhaps, may be holding his feet to the blaze before a hearth in the south wall, the two thus fairly sitting back to back. Is this well? Be it put to any man who has a proper fraternal feeling, has it not a sort of sulky appearance? But very probably this style of chimney building originated with some architect afflicted with a quarrelsome family. Then again, almost every modern fireplace has its separate flue separate throughout, from hearth to chimney top. At least such an arrangement is deemed desirable. Does not this look egotistical, selfish? But still more, all these separate flues, instead of having independent masonry establishments of their own, or instead of being grouped together in one federal stock in the middle of the house, instead of this, I say, each flue is surreptitiously honeycombed into the walls, so that these last are here and there, or indeed almost anywhere, treacherously hollow, and, in consequence, more or less weak. Of course, the main reason of this style of chimney building is to economize room. In cities, where lots are sold by the inch, small spaces to spare for a chimney constructed on magnanimous principles. And, as with most thin men, who are generally tall, so with such houses, what is lacking in breadth must be made up in height. This remark holds true even with regard to many very stylish abodes, built by the most stylish of gentlemen. And yet, when that stylish gentleman, Louis le Grand of France, would build a palace for his lady, friend, Madame de Maintenon, he built it, but one story high in fact in the cottage style. But then, how uncommonly quadrangular, spacious, and broad horizontal acres, not vertical ones. Such is the palace, which, in all its one-storied magnificence of Languedoc marble, in the Garden of Versailles, still remains to this day. Any man can buy a square foot of land, and plant a liberty pole on it. But it takes a king, to set apart whole acres for a Grand Trianon. But nowadays it is different. And furthermore, what originated in the necessity has been mounted into a vaunt. In towns there is large rivalry in building tall houses. If one gentleman builds his house four stories high, and another gentleman comes next door and builds five stories high, then the former, not to be looked down upon that way, immediately sends for his architect and claps a fifth and a sixth story on top of his previous four. And, not till the gentleman has achieved his aspiration, not till he has stolen over the way by twilight and observed how his sixth story soars beyond his neighbor's fifth, not till then does he retire to his rest with satisfaction. Such folks, it seems to me, need mountains for neighbors, to take this emulous conceit of soaring out of them. If, considering that mine is a very wide house, and by no means lofty, aught in the above may appear like interested pleading, as if I did, but fold myself about in the cloak of a general proposition, cunningly to tickle my individual vanity beneath it, such misconception must vanish upon my frankly conceding that land adjoining my alder swamp was sold last month for $10 an acre, and thought a rash purchase at that. So that for white houses hereabouts there is plenty of room, and cheap. Indeed so cheap, dirt cheap is the soil, that our elms thrust out their roots in it, and hang their great boughs over it, in the most lavish and reckless way. Almost all our crops too, are sown broadcast, even peas and turnips. A farmer among us, who should go about his 20-acre field, poking his finger into it here and there, and dropping down a mustard seed, would be thought a penurious, narrow-minded husbandman. The dandelions in the river meadows, and the forget-me-nots along the mountain roads, you see at once they are put to no economy in space. Some seasons too, our rye comes up here and there a spear, sole and single like a church spire. It doesn't care to crowd itself, where it knows there is such a deal of room. The world is wide, the world is all before us, says the rye. Weeds too, it is amazing how they spread. No such thing as arresting them some of our pastures, being a sort of Alsatia for the weeds. As for the grass, every spring it is like Kossuth's rising, of what he calls the peoples. Mountains too, a regular camp meeting of them. For the same reason, the same all-sufficiency of room, our shadows march and counter-march, going through their various drills and masterly evolutions, like the old Imperial Guard on the Champs de Mars. As for the hills, especially where the roads cross them, the supervisors of our various towns have given notice to all concerned that they can come and dig them down, and cart them off, and never a cent to pay, no more than for the privilege of picking blackberries. The stranger who is buried here, what liberal-hearted landed proprietor among us grudges him 6 feet of rocky pasture? Nevertheless, cheap, after all, as our land is, and much as it is trodden underfoot, I, for one, am proud of it for what it bears. and chiefly for its three great lions, the Great Oak, Og Mountain, and my chimney. Most houses here are but one and a half stories high, few exceed two. That in which I and my chimney dwell is in width nearly twice its height, from sill to eaves, which accounts for the magnitude of its main content, besides showing that in this house, as in this country at large, there is abundance of space, and to spare, for both of us. The frame of the old house is of wood, which, but the more sets forth the solidity of the chimney, which is of brick. And as the great wrought nails, binding the clapboards, are unknown in these degenerate days, so are the huge bricks in the chimney walls. The architect of the chimney must have had the pyramid of Cheops before him, for, after that famous structure, it seems modeled, only its rate of decrease towards the summit is considerably less, and it is truncated. From the exact middle of the mansion it soars from the cellar, right up through each successive floor, till, 4 feet square, it breaks water from the ridge pole of the roof, like an anvil-headed whale, through the crest of a billow. Most people, though, liken it, in that part, to a raised observatory, masoned up. The reason for its peculiar appearance above the roof touches upon rather delicate ground. How shall I reveal that, for as much as many years ago the original gable roof of the old house had become very leaky, a temporary proprietor hired a band of woodmen, with their huge, cross-cut saws, and went to sawing the old gable roof clean off. Off it went, with all its birds' nests and dormer windows. It was replaced with a modern roof, more fit for a railway wood house than an old country gentleman's abode. This operation, raising the structure some 15 feet, was, in effect upon the chimney, something like the falling of the great spring tides. It left uncommon low water all about the chimney to abate which appearance. The same person now proceeds to slice 15 feet off the chimney itself, actually beheading my royal old chimney, a regicidal act, which, were it not for the palliating fact that he was a poulterer by trade, and, therefore, hardened to such neck-wringings, should send that former proprietor down to posterity in the same cart with Cromwell. Owing to its pyramidal shape, the reduction of the chimney inordinately widened its raised summit. Inordinately, I say, but only in the estimation of such as have no eye to the picturesque. What care I, if, unaware that my chimney, as a free citizen of this free land, stands upon an independent basis of its own, people passing it wonder how such a brick kiln, as they call it, is supported upon mere joists and rafters. What care I? I will give a traveler a cup of switchel, if he want it, but am I bound to supply him with a sweet taste? Men of cultivated mind see, in my old house and chimney, a goodly old elephant and castle. All feeling hearts will sympathize with me in what I am now about to add. The surgical operation, above referred to, necessarily brought into the open air a part of the chimney previously under cover, and intended to remain so, and, therefore, not built of what are called weather bricks. In consequence, the chimney, though of a vigorous constitution, suffered not a little from so naked an exposure, and, unable to acclimate itself, ere long began to fail, showing blotchy symptoms akin to those in measles. Whereupon travelers, passing my way, would wag their heads, laughing, "See that wax nose, how it melts off." But what cared I? The same travelers would travel across the sea, to view Kenilworth peeling away, and for a very good reason. That of all artists of the picturesque, decay wears the palm, I would say, the ivy. In fact, I've often thought that the proper place for my old chimney is ivied old England. In vain my wife, with what probable ulterior intent will, ere long, appear, solemnly warned me that unless something were done, and speedily, we should be burnt to the ground, owing to the holes crumbling through the aforesaid blotchy parts, where the chimney joined the roof. W. Wife, said I, far better that my house should bum down, than that my chimney should be pulled down, though but a few feet. They call it a wax nose. Very good. Not for me to tweak the nose of my superior. But at last the man who has a mortgage on the house, dropped me a note, reminding me that, if my chimney was allowed to stand in that invalid condition, my policy of insurance would be void. This was a sort of hint not to be neglected. All the world over, the picturesque yields to the pocketesque. The mortgagor cared not, but the mortgagee did. So another operation was performed. The wax nose was taken off, and a new one fitted on. Unfortunately for the expression being put up by a squint-eyed mason, who, at the time, had a bad stitch in the same side, the new nose stands a little awry, in the same direction. Of one thing, however, I am proud. The horizontal dimensions of the new part are unreduced. Large as the chimney appears upon the roof, that is nothing to its spaciousness below. At its base in the cellar, it is precisely 12 feet square, and hence covers precisely 144 superficial feet. What an appropriation of terra firma for a chimney, and what a huge load for this earth. In fact, it was only because I and my chimney formed no part of his ancient burden, that that stout peddler, Atlas of old, was enabled to stand up so bravely under his pack. The dimensions given may, perhaps, seem fabulous. But, like those stones at Gilgal, which Joshua set up for a memorial of having passed over Jordan, does not my chimney remain, even unto this day? Very often I go down into my cellar, and attentively survey that vast square of masonry. I stand long, and ponder over, and wonder at it. It has a druidical look, away down in the umbrageous cellar there whose numerous vaulted passages, and far glens of gloom, resemble the dark, damp depths of primeval woods. So strongly did this conceit steal over me, so deeply was I penetrated with wonder at the chimney, that one day when I was a little out of my mind, I now think getting a spade from the garden, I set to work, digging round the foundation, especially at the corners thereof, obscurely prompted by dreams of striking upon some old, earthen-worn memorial of that bygone day, when, into all this gloom, the light of heaven entered, as the masons laid the foundation stones, peradventure sweltering under an August sun, or pelted by a March storm. Plying my blunted spade, how vexed was I by that ungracious interruption of a neighbor who, calling to see me upon some business, and being informed that I was below, said I need not be troubled to come up, but he would go down to me. And so, without ceremony, and without my having been forewarned, suddenly discovered me, digging in my cellar. Gold digging, sir? Nay, sir, answered I, starting, I was merely ahem. Merely, I say, I was merely digging round my chimney. Ah, loosening the soil, to make it grow. Your chimney, sir, you regard as too small, I suppose, needing further development, especially at the top? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.